the requirements for an LGR proposal. So this will be presented by Nicholas Olster, who is a member of integration panel. Then we will also share details of the LGR toolset, which we are developing. This will be given by Mark Blanchet. And then we have two presentations from the community. Hiro Hota will be presenting the coordination efforts going on between Chinese, Japanese, and Korean generation panels. And we have a presentation by Yuri Kargaplov on Cyrillic generation panel. So let's get the presentation, get to the first presentation by Nicholas on the requirements of an LGR proposal. So over to Nicholas.
Thank you very much, Sarmad. I'm Nicholas Oestler. I'm on the integration panel, and I am, in a way, representing the whole panel here and some of the concerns we have, some of the problems we've faced, some of the ways in which we hope we can add to the kind of advice which is online to help the various generation panels. And the way we've organized this is to look at a recent document which is, will be coming out soon, and will probably be in your inboxes quite soon, the proposal for a blah script root zone LGR, which is effectively to give guidance on the formatting, really, of an LGR proposal. Now, there's already a document on which is available, which is called Requirements for an LGR, and that is focused very much on the content. What we're doing here is having a little bit of a compromise. We're going through the formal elements in our template and talking about some of the issues which we have found are coming up when we get beginning to get the first actual proposals. So could I have the next slide, please? I'm going the wrong way. That's great. Now, if you get a copy of this document, you will see it has 9 sections. The first one is just a title, and the second is just some index data, really, about the script concerned. Then the real meat of the proposal comes, the qualitative and social background on the script and the principal languages using it. And that needs, of course, to be cut down from what it could be to be what's relevant to using these languages online. And the fourth item is a concept of how the proposal has been produced, because it will have been produced when this document is submitted. So it sort of orients people on the actual process, the actions which happened to make this document come about. The substantive parts of the proposal are 5, 6, and 7. The repertoire, first of all, then the variants, which define relations among characters in the repertoire, and the whole label evaluation rules, which define actions restricting strings of the code points and may also refine the variant rules which have been set up. And finally, there are two relatively trivial items at the end, the list of contributors to the proposal and a clear set of references which substantiate the decisions which have been made in the proposal as a whole. We're very keen that you should realize that you're producing a reference document here, so please make sure that every page has a page number and that the headers repeat down the document. But that's general good practice in producing documents, of course. in addition to the LGR proposal, and in addition to what we're talking about this afternoon, there will be at least two other documents involved, an XML format specification, which is basically the same normative content as is discussed and proposed in the proposal document, but written in XML, and so it's machine-readable. And there may also be a file of test cases to show how the XML format works and to make sure that it actually has the outcomes that were justified in the proposal document. So can we go on to the next one, please? Right. What we thought we'd do, first of all, is you can see what we've just talked about in brown at the left-hand side of this, which shows what the content of the template is. What this slide shows is how the two proposals which we have received already for Armenian and Arabic, although they were produced before the template was ready, nevertheless essentially enclose all the right document, all the right content, all the right elements, but perhaps in a slightly different order. So effectively, we seem to be already on the same lines. We're just crossing T's and dotting I's with this template to make sure that all the different proposals are readily comparable, both to us and indeed to anybody else who may want to examine them in the future. All right, let's move on. Now, as you may recall, the first items of the template are pretty formal and schematic. So effectively, the content of the general information overview and abstract is given on this slide. So as an example, this document presents the LGR proposal for XXXX. Script documents the design methodology and gives a justification for each of the design decisions. And it is accompanied by an XML document, proposed LGR XXX.xml, giving the LGR specification in XML format and valid labels XXX.x and invalid labels, perhaps also, for containing test cases demonstrating the features involved. Next. So that basically says what the... It's just an extended title, really. Now, this begins to give formal characterizations of the script which is described in the proposal. This is actually done two different ways. In the XML document, which we're not talking about, it's done with an RFC 5646 language tag and with the language field set to UND, undefined, because we're actually talking about a script here, not about a language. In the background document, we think that copying the ISO 15924 information is a useful way of identifying it uniquely, and this is what you can see here done for Armenian. There's also a few other little bits and pieces, like an English transcription of the script name and the native name of the script, which make it a bit more personal. Okay, next slide, please. Now, what should be said about the script and the main languages? Essentially, our aim is to document use of the script in a domain name context. So we don't need to know about the whole history of the script, often involving religious history at a deep level. We just need a very schematic background on the languages which are supported by the script, their number, the sort of diversity that characterizes them, historical links a little bit, and geographic distribution. But we don't need a long essay on this, just enough to set the context and to identify the natural classes of languages as reflected in the writing system. Sometimes there are different groups of languages all using the same script, and that may make give you one some idea of how the script is used differently in different parts of the world, for example. But we would like, this is the first chance to mention the issues which come into play, by which we primarily mean matters to do with variants, both within the script and also, and this is something which we're finding is becoming much more salient, now we're starting to get actual proposals, cross-script variants. And there may be other issues which you are aware of when you put in your proposal. Another thing which is quite useful to state at this point is how difficult it has been to get reliable information about language use. In some parts of the world, and in particular, we are struggling with this at the moment for Arabic, with West Africa, although there is a considerable tradition of script use, it's not clear what the trends are, or even indeed in many cases, what the prescribed characters are which should be used, and there may be some confusion in general practice. So in those sort of situations, it's often quite difficult, but for that reason, much more important to try and find reliable information about what the current status of the language use is. Okay, let's move on. Thank you. Now, this slide simply says a little bit more in more detail about what we've just been talking about. Which languages using the script are to be covered? You have already mentioned in your introduction the whole range of languages using the script, but you may have made a decision that only some of these are to be covered at this time. And various considerations may come into your decision here. One of the things which we've talked about quite a lot on previous open sessions is the use of the ethnologue graded scale of vitality, which is called EGIDS. And basically, our rule of thumb is that languages have to have a vitality of grade 4, which is characterized as educational, i.e. being taught in schools, or better, for them to have a chance of having an LGR at this stage. Other indicators of significant use can be found, though, and may to some extent overwhelm the evidence that is coming from Ethnologue. You may have a lot of evidence of presence on the internet and mass media, and there's government reforms of the script, which will tend to raise its profile. Especially in Arabic, we'll see different languages may have different preferences for variants. But what we're trying to do here is to create a unitary standard, which will be for a common root for all the different scripts. There are a number of difficult decisions to be taken as to how you accommodate a regional use of these scripts in a way which will not disadvantage anybody. Talking about evidence, people often say, well, here you are, here's the list of these characters as used in Unicode, and here they are as having been refined down, and they're in MSR1 or MSR2. But that is not the sort of evidence we're looking for, because that's just talking to ourselves. At least we need a reference in the Omniglot collection of scripts. That is independent of us. But ideally, we want something else which is clearly authoritative for the language involved, whether standards documents or measures of widespread use on the internet. Next, please. Right. This is item 4, which is really a general point about the general development process and methodology which has brought the proposal about. We expect that generation panels will submit probably a series of drafts to the integration panel, before they get to the final proposal. And then we will do the best we can to react to those drafts, to say what we think is good about them, to say what we think is difficult. And that means, of course, that there will not be a single proposal draft. There will be a series of them. And it's very important that the generation panels keep a clear log of how each new draft differs from the one that went before. Otherwise, you can see there's amazing scope for confusion to reign here. We will do the best we can as the integration panel to help you, but ultimately the draft remains your draft, not your understanding of what we want. We can, of course, come to some sort of an informal agreement before the final draft is submitted, and we hope that some of the major controversial issues will be resolved in that way. But ultimately, formally, we cannot, as an IP, assure the GPs that their draft will be accepted in advance of actually submitting it. I mean, that's the legal formal position. But we will try and make it as soft a process as we can. Can we move on? Thank you. Together with the proposal will come this XML document, and that has considerations of its own. It is effectively the equivalent of the proposal, but in a machine-readable form. It'll be defined in the XML LGR, as explained in various documents that we've put about, and there is, as you can see, also help available, both from background documents and indeed from members of the team, if you want to consult us on that. It would be good to have test cases which actually enable you and us to run the XML in advance to see that it's going well, and in the context of the labels which are actually relevant to your script. This document too is your document rather than an IP document. IP will do our best to make sure that it conforms and that difficulties have been ironed out, but again, it is up to you ultimately to have faith in your own document. Okay, next please. Now, we're moving on to the guts of the thing. Section 5 is the repertoire, which will be a listing in some readable form of the set of code points that you think is adequate to represent your script in the root. It will be shown there, but it will also be discussed, and the arguments that have led you to make these particular decisions will be set out clearly. You know, we're not telling you what form you have to put the arguments in, because what is clear will be clear, much clearer to you who are writing it than to us in advance of knowing what it's going to be. But we suggest that for alphabetic scripts and abjads like Arabic and syllabic scripts which have a relatively small number of members, say about 50, something like that, the chart pages from the MSR charts should be annotated to show adjustments made for the repertoire. So you're giving a list there. For longer repertoires, that's things like Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Han, syllabaries where every combination of elements is separately coded, as is done for Ethiopic or Korean Hangul, we will need to have a list, but they shouldn't necessarily be part of the repertoire. But the repertoire should be spend time giving your arguments for why you've chosen the particular set or subset that you have done, and the extent of what this generates may have to be stated in an appendix. It's important to cite authority for each point authorized. Sometimes you can say, well, there's a range of 20 characters here which are all justified in the same way by a single thing. That's all right. But at least that means that we do have a specific reference to justify every code point which is being proposed. And it's not just enough to say that, well, there is a language which is used and we want to represent that language. You've also got to prove that the characters that you are proposing are part of the representation of that language. And we've had a few cases already where this has been a bit too vague for our requirements. Okay, next please. Here's an example of what we thought was a good way of doing it, which is drawn from the current version of the Arabic proposal, and where you can see each code point is given a number in sequence, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, then the Unicode number, followed by an actual picture of the glyph as it shows up, and then the Unicode name, often with other names as well that it's been called, just making it very clear which character this is. Then the justification, the claim that it occurs in a certain number of languages. It doesn't have to be every language that the thing occurs in, as long as it occurs in some significant languages which are strong enough to have say, an EJID score, which is in the next column, which shows that whatever you want, you are going to want to have that character in the LGR because it represents, or it is needed for a very lively language, in this case, Arabic. And then, of course, but those details need to be substantiated, and in this case, the RFC 5564, thank you, is being quoted here. But then, effectively, you can see there is a row for each character on that table. Okay, let's move along, if I may. Now, in section 6 is where we come to this interesting question of variance. In this part of the proposal, we are not writing them out formally. We need to state them in a human-readable form, which is often, we found in cases where there are large numbers variants, can be effectively done through annotated tables. And the XML will do its own, will list things in extenso. It's important when you look at the XML file that there should be a complete set so that if any variant relationship is there at all, it will be part of a reflexive, symmetric, and transitive set of mappings. This makes sure that the coverage is complete. But it is, I think most people are probably clear now that this coverage has nothing to do with the assignment of types within the mapping. So the fact that character B is an applicable variant of character A does not mean that the reverse link might not be blocked. Sorry, when I said applicable, I meant allocatable. Ultimately, this set of variant relationships is going to have to be coordinated across scripts and other languages. This is something which is very clear to the Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. They're giving it a lot of thought at the moment. So no need to go to say more about it in this case at this point. But here's an example of some of the complications you can get into with variants into a relatively smaller script than Chinese, Japanese, Han. And this is Arabic. And we're just looking here at different ways in which letters which are held, in some sense, by Arabic and Arabic script users to be the same. Like, we have four versions of the letter Feh. The first three are the same. The fourth, which is used in Hausa, has a different Unicode number, but it's held to be the same letter within the script. So that means that Hausa runs this particular part of its alphabet differently from the rest of Arabic, and this, the real problem comes when you look at what they do for correspondingly for Kaf, where in Hausa, the dot is above the curl, which makes it, in many cases, indistinguishable from the letter Fech in standard Arabic. We can see in many other cases that there are this variation of particular letters. It seems that one way of dealing with this would have been to do something comparable to what the Chinese have done with the Chinese, with the simplified and traditional characters, and so have different areas for Arabic. But it turns out that the co-occurrence of these different variants is not reliable enough to make that a good strategy, at least as we understand at the moment. Okay, let's go on to the next. The main game, the name of the game in the variants is to try to find ways to minimize the number of allocatable variants, code points that are left in your system when the variant rules are set up. If you don't do this, you'll find that you've got a major headache in trying to eliminate excessive numbers of labels when it comes to registration. So how can you reduce the labels which are generated by variants? Because, of course, the problem is that the variants are being described at the character level. Every label contains several, or may contain several code points, and if there are multiple variant code points within that label, then you're going to get cross-product gets bigger and bigger. One way of doing it, and the most famous way of doing it, is the Chinese approach, which is basically to say that characters get classified as either being simplified or traditional or both, and that in a given label you can only have simplified and both or traditional and both types. You cannot mix simplified and traditional. And that seems to be quite a good way of doing it. I mentioned just a moment ago that one could conceive of doing something similar with Arabic, especially in the troubling case of the African Arabic characters. But basically, the jury is still out on that one, and we haven't really reached the final statement of how we're going to deal with all that. Another way of doing it, and which is effectively to say it hasn't been decided, is to do it arbitrarily. It's been demonstrated that for Japanese, simple and traditional characters mix anyway in official names of things. So whatever the Japanese decide to do, they can't simply follow the Chinese rule. And so they have to find some other means of specifying any variants that they want. But as we heard this morning, at the moment, they're not proposing to have any formal variants at all for Japanese, other than what they inherit from the script as a whole from Chinese. Okay, next. Something else, however, has come up to bite us a bit, even in what we thought was the simplest script to get fixed up, and that was Armenian. And so that's why Armenia is so the head of the queue in a way, because we thought there wouldn't be that many problems in getting it, because they don't appear to have any in-script variants. Nevertheless, in certain fonts at least, they do have a number of characters which look like characters in Cyrillic, Greek, and Latin, and that was shown to us this morning, which means that we then therefore have to start thinking about formulating cross-script variant rules for these characters, and this is something which, well, this is a growing point of the policy as things stand. Right, as I said, the Armenia proposal has actually given a tentative set of such cross-script glyph rules in 4.3. Next, please. And finally, in terms of content, we've got the whole label evaluation rules, which are needed, will always be needed, to give effect to those things like Chinese simplified versus traditional. So it is a whole label evaluation rule which prevents them from co-occurring. But there's something to bear in mind about the whole level evaluation rules. It's just that you set them up for your own script, but they will then be, if they are incorporated, they will be valid for every script in the root. And consequently, we have to think a little bit further ahead. That's something new. But it should be possible to restrict the scope of W. If there is going to be a clash, to restrict the scope of the ones which are a problem. Okay, next, please. And really, we're coming to the end now. Here are these three items, the list of contributors. It's always nice to know who's gone into it, both for the credit of the people involved, and also to know who to go back to talk to if there are somebody has problems in the future. References we do need to know, because this is an, you know, a document for the ages in a way. This is setting up a small but significant part of the internet, and so we want to know on what the foundations were in terms of evidence. And finally, there will be sets of appendices, which are basically items which were too long to fit conveniently into the proposal document as a whole. Right, that is our guidance on the minimum contents for a successful LGR proposal. If you do that, you will have a successful LGR proposal. Next, please. We are here to help you through. These are the faces behind the rules and procedures. And so we look forward to dealing with you all in the future. I think that's basically it. There are some of the resources which will give you more details on what I've been talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicholas. And then we move on to our next presentation. As you all know, we are now undertaking a project to develop a tool set which will allow community to interact and use LGRs. So over to Marc Blanchet from Virginie to give us an overview of the tool set. It is currently under development, and it would be great to get your feedback in the process so that we can have this tool which is most useful for everybody. Smart.
Good afternoon. Next slides, please. So presentation as a background of this project, project plan and timeline, UX design, high-level architecture, current status, and conclusion. Next slide. I'm going to skip this. I think we've been talking about this a lot, so we know what the LGR XML format is, and the idea is it's probably not easy for non-XML savvy people, and the file format doesn't provide by itself a lot of services such as verification, validation, and stuff. So the idea is to have a tool set for LGR, including a web front end and, you know, some typical CLI libraries, and being open source. So this will be available for the community to continue using and adapting to their own use. And next slide. So we are seeing three phases in the project plan. The first one is about the LGR creation. It is a web-based application. that allows the users to construct an LGR through an interactive interface. Have a rule set export to a syntactically valid LGR in the XML format, and to define the general metadata and linguistic content, including the eligible code points, code point variants, and variant dispositions. So that is the first phase that is we've been working on. Second phase is to you would have additional functionality, which is you select a predefined LGR in the XML format, you know, such as the one you created. And then you validate a label or generate its variant labels along their dispositions. The third one is LGR management functions, which is a conversion of languages tables into XML format. There's a few tables format that have been in the wild for now, and we will be able to, you will be able to convert those formats to the integrated LGR format. You could compare two LGRs and add additional operations against two LGRs, such as union, intersection, and difference. Next slide. In May, the contract was awarded to us, the team working on it. Together with the team was also formed with Will Tan here, that you probably know. And I have asked him to stand up and make a dance, but he declined. The first release is scheduled for August. Which is related to the previous slide I just shown in the three phases. So essentially, first release is first phase, second release, second phase, and third release is the third phase. Next slide. So these are UX designs that were done by our UX designer at home, at the office. These are preliminary in the sense that you know, they don't cover all the details, and we'll fix the details as we go, but it will give you a good overview. And it's just an extract. It's actually the whole design is, you know, many, many pages long. So the first idea I would like to describe is the user workflow is think of this tool as an editor of a file, of an XML file. What you have to manage is your own files yourself. So you actually start a session with the tool. Either you create a file or you load an existing file from your computer, and then you edit that file, that XML file, with the interface. And then you could, you know, do various, you know, stuff, code points, variants, references, all that stuff. And then when you're done, you re-import the file from the server, from the tool, to your computer. And then you start iterating into this loop as you need. So the important part here is that you own the file, and it's just an image, temporary image on the server that you edit. Next slide. These are just, again, this is an extract of the whole design, and these are the primary screens flow. So you start with almost an empty screen that will give you some instructions how to work, and you can either start with a new LGR or import one from the computer. Then on the left, you would edit the code points, and I think I have, there's a additional slides on this, you will see more details. So one screen for code point editing, which includes variance model, and then one screen or tab for references, and one screen for metadata of the LGR. Then you would have a button that says summary, and then summary does a summary of your LGR as well as validation. Such as, you know, you have some code points that are not p-valued or things like that. And then the button for download to get back the file, the edited file in your computer. Next slide. So this is, again, inside the code point editing, there's a few models and additional screens. So you could, at that point, add variants and manage variants and the types and those kinds of stuff and edit the references for these specific code points. Next slide. Here's an example, and the designer is not an internationalized expert, so he asked me about what is the lorem ipsum that they use to do for text and for characters, and I said, use any character, but not emoji. So he used as examples some Chinese hand character and some others in the screens, and obviously that screen is completely, you know, not appropriate in terms of real GR, it's just a UX design. So you see those code points and then the type and comment and button on the right to add a variant. And so those are the variants for a specific code point. Next slide. High-level architecture, next slide. So platform, deployment platform, Linux, Python 2.7 something, Django, latest stable release, and ICU library. That's the main components that we're using. And the client platform is essentially any modern browser, no plugin or anything else needed. Next slide. There will be no authentication, but only session management. Therefore, you won't need an email address or an ID to use the tool. It will just accept anybody, but the server will manage the session, so you'll be in good shape for managing your XML file as you go. And obviously, one of the goals is to have the underlying libraries and code to be reused for other main. So it will be on open source and maybe packaged inside the various package management systems in open source operating systems. Next slide. This is the high-level architecture, which is essentially says there's a browser, goes through HTTP over the web framework that is drove by Django, and then the different libraries in the back end. Next slide. Core libraries are being written, pretty good advance. First screen's being implemented. We are able to import and export LGRs. We are able to view the LGR, and we are doing some basic validation. So it's the current status is, you know, progressing well in terms of something actually functional for, not pretty, but functional to work already. And we're currently on target for the August delivery. One thing I would like to make a point here is early August, before the final release, we would really like to have beta testers, people that would like to, you know, kill the software as much as they can and find all the bugs so the release will be much stable and better. So if you are interested in being a guinea pig, please contact me at the email address here. So, conclusion, LGR work is complex, and the XML format is not necessarily user-friendly for non-technical people, especially linguistic people involved in this process. The tool set is there for to help streamline the process and to create and manage the LGRs. Open source will help other entities to use and contribute and enhance the tool set, and we're looking for beta testers for early August testing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. We'll move ahead with our agenda. The next presentation is going to be made by Hiro Hota on behalf of the Japanese, Chinese, and Korean generation panels. And it will talk about the coordination challenges and solutions. So over to Hiro Hota.
Okay, thank you very much. My name is Hiro Hota from JGP, and we have one way here from CGP. The second chair, co-chair of CGP, Kenny Huang, is not here. And the Professor Kim, KGB chair, is sitting on my second right. So I'm going to present briefly on behalf of three generation panels. Next, please. This is a relationship among CJK language LGRs. So as you see, the Japanese has hiragana, katakana, and han as their scripts, and Chinese has only han, and Korean language has hangul and han. So this is the a kind of complex situation of us three. So Japanese LGR has to handle with the han, hiragana, and katakana. And Korean will handle with hangul and han, and Chinese will handle han. Next, please. And typical issues, especially regarding han characters, which is shared by three of us. Each of CJK has thousands of han characters as a repertoire, or in other words, in daily life. And MSR has about 20,000 han characters. And among them, CGP picks up about 13,000 han characters from MSR. And JGP 6,000 and KGP 6,000 as well. And many han characters are shared by CJK because it was born in China and imported to Japan and Korea. And some characters have different usage or meaning in different languages. So it's very complex. So variant definition is different in different languages. This is the result of the different usage or meaning. As to the variant definition, CGP will define about 3,000 variant groups. For example, the two groups I wrote here. The first group is a country. These are the same characters in China, or in Chinese language, but these are the different characters in Japan. And the second example is two characters which are equivalent in Chinese characters, but in Korea and in China, they are very different. The first one is a desk, and the second one is a machine. Okay, and JGP, Japanese GP, defines no variants. It means all characters are independent or different ones. And KGP tentatively defines 66 variant groups, and they are investigating whether they do have more or they do have less. And rules for strings are different from language to language, and some combination of characters are prohibited in Chinese strings. It means that the Chinese language has three types of kanji, han characters. One group is traditional, and second is simplified, and the third is it has both features. But in Japanese case, there's no such category. And some combination of characters are prohibited. It means that the mixture of simplified and traditional is prohibited in Chinese. And all combination of characters are allowed in Japanese strings. So there are some different rules we have. Next, please. And CJK coordination. So as I said, we have to coordinate how to give rules to han characters. That we had ad hoc meetings CGP, JHP, and KGP met in ICANN meetings in 2014 and this year. And CGP and IGP met during ITF in March 2015. And coordination committees are kind of formal committee, formal meeting was held in May for 1.5 days with IP participation in some parts from remote. And a few more meetings may be needed to coordinate and conclude. The conclusion may be reached, I hope, late this year or early next year, because it will take time as they are complicated issues, as shown in the previous page. And also, KGP has had no experience on Han character domain names so far. Next, please. And framework of CJK LGR integration for Han characters. First of all, each GP will develop each LGR, primitive LGR, and merge them and merge them and extract their respective repertoires for Chinese, Japanese, and Korean, and see whether it works for each language. And if they think it doesn't, so iterative feedback will be done. Next, please. Some of the further discussion items, so it's not defined. Such issues is not defined in detail, but maybe two big issues. One is limiting the number of allocator variant labels. So there'll be some ways to reduction. So, for example, reduction of variant characters, especially the Chinese LGR, or devising a WLE with crafted definition of variant subtypes and rules, or investigation of the possibility of coordination between root LGR and after application evaluation. But it should be discussed with ICANN if we pursue this solution. And investigation of the possibility of root LGR to be empowered to accept two or more strings as applied for strings. This should be discussed with ICANN as well, if possible at all. So disposition of distinct variants, dividing which are variants in some languages and but are not variants in other languages, such as these strings. The first one is on the table. And the second one is on the plane, I think in Japanese or in Korean, but they are the same. They have the same meaning in Chinese. On the plane?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. And investigation of the possibility of coordination between root LGR and after application evaluation by crafted definition of variant subtypes and outputs of root LGR. So if it's possible at all, we want to discuss with ICANN about this. Thanks.
Thank you. Ota-san, for the presentation. We'll move to the last presentation. It will be done by Yuri Kargapalov, who's the chair of the Cyrillic Generation Panel. He is not here, so he will be presenting remotely. Yuri, can you hear us?
Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, so please go ahead.
Okay, I hear myself too. Good evening from Kyiv.
Good evening from Kyiv.
And good afternoon in Buenos Aires, amigos.
Good afternoon in Buenos Aires, amigos.
Our panel has submitted the first draft of a proposal already, and received the first portion of comments on the substance of from integration panel. Therefore, my presentation will focus on how we came to this life. Of course, we have not such problems as present in the Chinese, Japanese, Korean scripts, but the huge territory and huge variety of Cyrillic language, languages confronts us with great challenges. What was discussed?
Sorry to interrupt, Yuri. Is it possible for you to mute your computer? We are getting an echo here.
Yes, I have echo.
Can you mute your computer?
At least I hear echo.
Is it possible for you to mute your speakers? Can you hear? So Yuri? Oh. We'll try to reconnect.
Hello?
Yes, please go ahead, Yuri.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What was discussed in our within our generation panel? The first was organizational purpose, organizational aims of the first stage was formation of the document proposal for generation panel. Is the organizational proposal. The technical, so-called technical proposals on the first stage was the establishment of the frameworks for future work of the Cyrillic Generation Panel. And those frameworks should include multiplicity of sets of the languages based on Cyrillic. Lots of relevant Unicode points and the conditions under which the Cyrillic Generation Panel can take a corrective decision in future policy. Please, next slide. Third, we had discussed the Cyrillic Generation Panel, took into account the following conditional speaking technical features. Panel diversity, scripts for which the panel is to be established, principal languages using the scripts that should be included as languages according ISO standards, geographical territories or countries with significant user communities for the scripts, the related scripts in Latin, Greek, we think that it was only Latin and Greek, but our practice give us some correctives. Some features of subject, in particular specific cases which are present in selected principal languages. And for the Cyrillic, our general panel took into account the following conditional organizational features. Relevant experience and detail about organization that represented in panel, a relationship with partner of working groups within ICANN. And yes, we have such. Please, next slide. What issues we have? First, the Cyrillic scripts, we have two Cyrillic scripts. Cyrillic scripts in life, number 220, code SEALS, and the Cyrillic Old Church Slavonic variant. Why two scripts? Because Old Church Slavonic variant used in regular life of Orthodox Church. And imagine that the Orthodox Church wants in the future to register own IDN GDLD, which will be basic on Cyrillic, CIR-C, code number 220-221. In doing so, Church in free, open, transparency way in many countries on all continents will gather bring in support with initiative no less than 50 million or more signatures that more in the several times the opposition of some Europe countries. Very interesting case. Next, please. We have a real problem in the existing organizational frameworks Cyrillic Generation Panel. This is a problem of determining the set of principal languages using the scripts that should include a member of languages according ISO standard. We rely on the methodology for a determination of many ones through use the edges level. But, for example, we cannot recognize the level of Rusyn language because it has a different status and relevant edges level in different four countries, Serbia, Hungary, Slovakia, and Ukraine. Because the levels of 4, 3, and 2 on the edge scale for some languages what circulated in Russia require additional examination, additional study. The solutions of these basic questions depends to attraction to our team, the specialist linguist on Cyrillic languages. Yes, we know such professionals, but work on the volunteer basis, will we not? And we need help. We need help in this issue. Please, next slide. We had highlighted a few particular cases that make up look on non-standard in some issues. For example, first, Montenegrin case. Because the national alphabet includes as well as Cyrillic and Latin letters. In the remarks, integration panel withdrew this issue because these code points are present in current version of MSR. Okay, but Ukrainian and Belarusian case. The national alphabet includes apostrophe, this function like usual letter. Please, next slide. And to our mind, the use of uppercase and lowercase Unicode plot points in Cyrillic case. Yes, we know that according RFC and according IDNA 2008, uppercase letters are disallowed. But we have a problem of visualization, because some users can receive email, for example, with phishing in upper case register. You should see on this table for Mac and Mac in Latin and Cyrillic as a confusion variant for users. I repeat, it's only visualization, but a real phishing case in the future. Please next slide. And when we look at only two sets of Unicode code points, Greek and Cyrillic, Latin and Cyrillic. After report of Armenian generation panel in Singapore, we have to draw attention to existence of one more set. It's an Armenian set, and the integration panel did it in this comment. We have four code points that can bore the confusion-able variants. Please, next slide. As noted, the by integration panel, it's difficult to judge the adequacy of coverage of the Cyrillic generation panel. This is primarily due to the fact that the participants in this panel should cover not only the huge territory from the Balkans to the Pacific Ocean, but over 108 languages. The Balkans and Eastern Europe are well represented in our generation panel. We have deficit of representation from Russia and from Russia territory, big Russia territory, and Central Asia territory, in all the languages diversity. But if we found a few specialists from, I know two specialists from Central Asia, now we have a negotiation for including this guys in work of the Cyrillic generation panel. It's very hard to find the Chukchi, Tunguska, Kamchatka, Adiga, Avar, and etc. IT specialists who know the ICANN interest in this matter. So, as noted by the integration panel, we have five languages on ages level 2. Two languages on ages level 3. And 11 languages on ages level 4. So we need help for these issues. Next slide, please. What next? We have a plan, work under our plan, and with remarks of integration panel, we should change some stages in our work, and we do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yuri. Especially because it's late where you are. We appreciate you coming online and speaking to us. So now let's take, we have time for a couple of questions. So are there any questions around the room?
So I have, my question is, when will each GPs should finish their work? Is there any deadline? Because I think that the next GTLD rounds will start next year or next year. So I'd like to know some part of the deadline of our work.
This is a community-led effort, so there's no imposed deadlines. Obviously, it would be very useful to have the GPs generation panels finish their work in time for consideration for the next round of GTLD. As I said, this is a community-led effort. For many of the GPs which are already active, we see that the work should be able to converge over the next year. So we hope to make very good progress before the new GTLD round.
And also there are two questions from the remote participant. First, from Alexander Tsaruk, if I pronounce it right. If ASCII and UTF-8 tables do not have enough space for all usable IDN symbols, could we move to larger UTF-8-32 table as basic table for links and email addresses symbol?
I don't understand the question.
I'll just read it again. If ASCII and UTF-8 tables do not... Oh, okay, you understand the words.
I understand the words, the letters, the syllables, but not the meaning of the question. I'm sorry.
So maybe we can request Alexander to rephrase the question online and we can take it. Let's move on to the next question.
The next question is from John Colosi. What is the LGR review process like? Can interested parties review the code points and rules and provide comments? How can the community help to ensure that the XML matches the document and we are not implementing unwanted language or grammar rules?
So IP, anybody want to take that?
There is a public review. I mean, the IP does initial work, but we see a public review that will be conducted by ICANN for any LGR submitted. So that's when the community at large can obviously contribute on comment on LGRs when they go there.
So you can look at it in a three-step process where at the first step, the generation panel will internally review what they're submitting and makes sure that it matches. In a second step, it goes through a public review where the community can look at the documentation and the XML structure and see whether there are any mismatches, identify any issues, and point them out. And finally, once it's gone through those two filters, it goes to integration panel where the final evaluation and check is going to be done. And if there are any issues, they will be obviously identified and fixed before it can be integrated.
Yeah, I wanted to add another item element here that obviously is there a discrepancy between the XML on the document, because that may happen. In general, I mean, the principle is that the XML is a normative, definition of the repertoire on the different, of the LGR. I mean, that's really very clear that the XML, is a standard. Not the document is there to help you understand the XML, because obviously the XML document is, file is not exactly human readable. I mean, you can, but it's not easy. So it's the document is there to explain it. But if there is a contradiction, again, the XML is just the reference.
Asmus.
Thank you, Samrat. This is Asmus speaking. Just to augment what Michelle said, it means that for the public review process, reviewers are encouraged to also use that opportunity to review that the proposed document and the XML version actually do match, and not just rely on the nice description in the document.
So we don't have any more questions online. Any questions, comments in the room? Okay, great. So let's then wrap up the session. Let's thank the speakers, especially Yuri, for joining late from remote. So thank you very much, and let's close the session.